Welcome to Every Step Podcast. I'm Christina Weston.
And I'm Judith Beck.
Every Step is the podcast where career and life meet.
Hi, Christina.
Well, hey, Judith.
I'm really excited about this episode because there's a few things that I have found out in the last couple of weeks. Now, one is that Apple has a new series. It's a historical series, and it's called The New Look.
Oh, I've been watching it.
Yeah.
It's well, cool.
For those of you who haven't been watching it, it traces the story of Coco Chanel and Christian Dior during the German occupation of France in World War II. Now, my view of
I had no idea about some of that stuff.
I know. Well, my view of Coco Chanel through the years was strong woman, iconic fashion designer. And I hate to say it, this is my view, and I think people should go in and watch this, and they should also start reading some stuff on Coco Chanel, historical things, because I can hardly even look at the logo.
Has it really upset you that much?
It really upset me.
So for those that haven't watched it, what comes out of the series is that she was a notorious Nazi collaborator, and that hasn't come out. I mean, I've been interested in the Chanel brand for as long as I can remember. I had a friend that used to work for Chanel. So whenever they had employee discounts and those sorts of things, I used to get a tag along. So I've kind of had a relationship with the Chanel brand in one way, shape or form for a number of years. I had no idea she was a Nazi collaborator.
Well, not only that, she was also an agent. She had a code name called Westminster.
Yeah.
And the worst part of it, is that she unsuccessfully, thank goodness, tried to use the Nazi Aryan laws, preventing Jews from owning businesses, to try to take control of her perfume company from her Jewish partners. Now, what happened, according to what I've read, is that the partners, they actually gave the company to a non-Jewish person for that very reason, so she didn't get it, and which was really good. So there's a lot more to this. We could
but
go
a
on
Jewish family now own the business. I think I did a bit of a Google. A Jewish family now own the business.
That's right. That Jewish family who they forgave her later on, and just goes to show how compassionate they were, because I wouldn't have. But again, the reality is, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, it's because what do we know about the people who are running the brands and the things that we buy, that we follow? I literally, not that I have a lot of Chanel in my closet. I don't, because
not lipstick.
Well, my other thing with this is that the luxury brands, I've always thought
it's marketing.
It's a big marketing ploy to get you to spend your hard-earned dollars on things that are overpriced.
Yep.
And that's what you're paying for. And when I was interviewing people, when they would come into the office, and I would get, because you know, people would, you know, put their best front on. And when someone came into an interview as what I would classify a walking billboard, that was a red flag to me, because there were a few things. I'd think to myself, okay, are they actually insecure? And is this their way of getting cred?
So if they're wearing a fancy outfit with logos that you can tell, or come in with a $6,000 handbag or whatever, these are the assumptions or presumptions you would make, yeah?
I remember this one person one time, and she kind of really sticks in my mind. And the guys would do it too, but theirs would be more like briefcases and Montblanc pins. But the girls,
or fancy watches,
or the fancy watches, a Rolex with diamonds on it, or something. But the, you know, the Chanel chains and the Fendi bag and the shoes that have the big logo on it. I'm, like I said, a walking billboard. So
might have been fake.
Well, and okay, so that was even worse. If they were fake, then I'm thinking, then now you're supporting child labor overseas. And that used to make me mad too. But I'd sit there and I'd go, okay, why are you doing this? You're paying thousands of dollars and you're advertising for them as well. But the other thing I would think, I'd think, okay, or are they just egotistical and this was their way of showing off? Or worse, because I was recruiting for executives in the financial industry, were they financially stupid and paying for overpriced items when they still had a mortgage and they had a young family?
So did you shortlist any of these candidates?
Oh, my God. No, you know, because I would, the people I wanted to see, I wanted to see them come in sharp, you know, with a beautiful, you know, tailored, nice outfit on, because you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get a good quality brand. Not, you know, don't go the extreme. Don't go the high luxury and don't go the fast fashion. You know, go the quality, and they didn't have to advertise labels. Those were the people that I would have more respect for, obviously, at the end of the day. If they were all bling, then that actually didn't say winner to me. Told me lack of confidence in many times. And, you know, and I think one time, I remember this one time, I calculated in my head, this one person that came in with this beautiful outfit on, you know, basically beautiful as far as the Chanel thing, because Chanel jackets today are, you know, 10, 20, 30, you know, they're expensive. The Louis Vuitton and all those, a handbag is over $10,000. Some of these handbags can be over 30, but I remember calculating if everything was real, it'd be about $40,000.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, seriously, either you have one outfit for the rest of your life.
That's crazy.
You know, and at the end of the day, if you're a billionaire or whatever, well, then that's probably nothing to you. But I still think that spending that much money on those types of things, when there's so many other things happening in the world, is a waste. Don't get me wrong. In my 20s and my 30s, I wanted to have nice clothes too. I would go shopping and that type of thing. I was making good money, and you know, I had a little fashion addiction as well. But when that rush was gone of buying something, I felt guilty.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but I never bought the Chanels and the you know, those, because that was way out of my league even then. But I wouldn't have. I know I wouldn't have. But I bought mid-range. Like, I bought mid-range luxury. And, I mean, not, today I look at things that are going to stand the test of time, and that if I'm going to spend money on something, I better have it for a long time. But the point is,
now you're a conscientious objector, right? So what the interesting thing here for me is thinking about the business aspect of this is the people investing in that business. So she's an entrepreneur. We're using the Chanel story, but she's an entrepreneur, and she's got these VCs, effectively the Jewish family, investing in her, knowing what she's doing, almost. I'm wondering if they did know what she was doing, but they continued to invest in her. So would you invest in a business if you knew the CEO or the founder or the main principal was unethical or was involved in betraying the country that you were living in? Because I guess it would have been a form of treason at that point. I think she was even potentially hauled into, which I didn't know, or certainly a friend was hauled in for treason. So this is kind of the interesting thing about it is would you invest in a business if you knew that the people working in the business were either doing terrible things or child labor, or, and we've seen lots of examples of this over time, or would you work for a business that had those things if you knew that?
Isn't that interesting? I mean, in the case of, from what I can tell, and I don't want to give any sort of anything away from the show.
Yeah, the show's great, by the way. If you haven't watched the show, guys, it's a really enjoyable show.
And then don't only watch it, also go and read the articles, because yeah, the actual things, because the show but it isn't as bad as the reality is. So according to the show, it's looked like one of the brothers had a bit of a thing for her.
Yeah.
Where the other brother hated her. Why wouldn't you hate her if she was going to invoke those laws to try to get the business, which was all about the Chanel No. 5 perfume. So my take on it was that the brothers going through the whole process down the track, because she actually, they took care of her expenses and everything for the rest of
She lived in the Ritz till she died, apparently.
Yeah, and I think that was to get the full Chanel ownership. So it was probably a total business thing for them.
Look, it was a business. It seems to have been, and we don't know the facts. We're just watching a TV program and shooting the breeze here. But, yeah, it seemed like that was the deal that she made. She got to live in the Ritz till her dying days, and she had a good life. But she came across as very manipulative.
And opportunistic.
And opportunistic.
And whoever is winning right now, I'm going to be on their team, and I'll chop and change whenever I want to.
So would you work for a business where the founder was like that?
No, I would not. Yeah. You have to look yourself in the mirror at the end of the day. And if you, so I know the ownership in that, I know we're going back to the ownership in that has changed. And I know they do actually a lot of good things for Jewish causes and things like that, which is great. I can't look at that logo now.
Because of the history of it.
I'm not even Jewish. I can't, because I know that, you know, what happened in World War II was horrible. And so I can't even look at that logo now. But the fact that it's owned by a company that's doing something, would I buy something of Chanel that didn't have that logo on it? Maybe because Karl Lagerfeld, I think, was the...
Lagerfeld.
Yeah, maybe something that might be, that would be different. But I can't look at, I could never look at that logo the same way anymore. And that's just me. But as far as working for someone, you have got to work for people that you admire and respect. And I'm sure the people that work at Chanel and work there now, they have a whole different view probably, because
yeah.
Or that family who are probably philanthropists and they're, you know, doing good things and that kind of stuff. So it's a different company.
Let's talk about what motivates, because I've been in this situation in my own career. Let's talk about what motivates people to hang around when they know there's bad stuff going down and when they know that it's against their values. I did a consulting gig a number of years ago, and initially it was okay, and then pretty quickly I realized that there was a misalignment of values, and not just a little misalignment of values, but a big misalignment of values. The person in this organization would lie, and then would want me to lie to customers. And we'll talk about another example that's happened just recently as well. And initially, I'm going to be honest here. Initially, I sucked it up. I would go home every night. You need to ask my husband. I would go home every night in tears. But we were struggling at that time. We didn't have a lot of money. And I thought I was taking one for the team. And I did it for a little while, but I was miserable, miserable. And in the end, the pain and the misalignment of values, I was physically sick because I was internalizing this, the horribleness of the emotion. In the end, I actually left. I walked out. Even though we had no money, even though we had no cash flow. But I can kind of get, because I've been there and I've sucked it up, I kind of get why people hang around. But gee, it's a horrible, horrible place to be. It's a horrible place to be.
That would be absolutely horrible. And I think the thing is, it's you're hanging around out of need and necessity, and
yeah,
and support your family. So if that's happening to you in your workplace, you need to start the process of exit. And so regardless of what level you're on, if you need to start putting in place, how do I exit out of here?
My advice to you is get out.
Get out, because it will eat at you. You won't feel good about yourself. You'll be contributing to something that, you know, that might not be good, you know, as far as what they're doing.
It's likely to tarnish your reputation too, because, you know, I didn't stay very long in this particular organization, but I think others in the industry knew the reputation of some of these people and this organization, and it'll rub off on you. If you hang around a long time, the stink will rub off on you.
That's a really good point, because I'm not going to mention companies, obviously, but during my executive search years, there were a couple companies that did not do the right thing within the industry and got a bad reputation. And I would have clients say to me, do not headhunt anyone out of those companies. So to your point, it ruins your reputation at every level. So, you know, get out of there before, you know, the stuff hits the fan and go somewhere else, because reputation is everything. So that's where companies, when they do something illegal or wrong. But what about if it's just a, you know, it's just a thought, like for instance, Woolworths, when they wouldn't sell Australian
Day products on Australia Day.
So there's a situation where obviously shoppers are going to go, well, I'm not going to shop at Woolworths anymore.
That's a misalignment of values of an organization. Well, it was the CEO making a captain's call, from what I gather.
Yeah, exactly. But what about if you're the employee and you're thinking, okay, I don't really like that view that they're not supporting the country on Australia Day. And so, you know, that's another thing, regardless of what it is.
So what you raise another interesting aspect of this is sometimes your leaders are going to make a call that you don't believe is right, or it's a misalignment with your values. And if it happens once, you might be a little pissed, but you suck it up. It happens twice, you kind of go, not. But if it happens again and again and again, like, because not everyone's going to make the same decisions that you're going to make all the time, right? There's not going to be a complete alignment all the time. It's just human nature. But yeah, it's that repeated making of decisions where you and the organization are saying, that doesn't sit well with me. The way that person spoke to so-and-so, the way that person is treating so-and-so, the way that person is making decisions about our customers or about products and services, that doesn't sit well with me. And they're the scenarios where, you know, isolated incident, okay, sit, watching brief, you know, red flag, watching brief. But if the red flag comes up multiple times, that's when it's time to get out.
Exactly. And also,
Or speak up. Let's talk about speaking up.
Well, unfortunately, not everybody will feel comfortable in speaking up depending on the level that they're in.
Yeah.
And if it's something to do with legal or ethical, that's one category. And then there's the category of process and structure. And, you know, you might not be happy because they did a restructure and they've added a new department that you don't think they need. That's a whole different ballgame.
Whatever.
Yeah. Than ethical and legal. And, you know, like if a company goes, oh, don't worry about that. Just, you know, the customer will never notice it, like a mistake or something. The customer will never notice it. Just sweep it under the carpet. Well, that's an ethical thing. Because then you should speak up and say, no, I don't feel comfortable about it. And I think we should point it out to the customer, accept our mistake, and fix the problem. They'll have more respect for us if we highlight what the mistake was, than them finding the mistake later and coming to us. So,
but it takes a brave person. You know, there have been some very high-profile scenarios where, let's call them the whistleblowers, the whistleblower had a really difficult time of it. So Boeing has been in the press a lot, and there's been a case with the key whistleblower on the Boeing case. And effectively, they were taking shortcuts on safety to save money.
Well, yeah, that's not good.
But that person was crude. That person lost their job. I mean, there's now been a whole court case around it, but that person lost their job. And I think it's really easy to, you know, get rid of the person who's causing the problem. But I think if you're that person, you're still better off out of there for your own well-being.
You should think of your employer like you do your political party or your football team, right? Who am I going to cheer for? Who am I going to support? And what kind of policies do they have? Where's the future? How do I fit in? Is it going to benefit me, the company, maybe the world? And you look at all those aspects. And I think these days, I think they even have chat rooms and websites where people will go in and put a review on an employer.
Oh yeah, glass ceiling. Anyway, there is a
you know, before you take a job, you should check all that out. And I always would say to candidates, I'd say if you want to know whether or not the company more about the company, just go on LinkedIn, put the company name in to see how many employees there are at that company, but then look and see if they're still there.
Glassdoor, finally. Glassdoor. I just Googled it. Glassdoor.
Because if you do that search and you see that there's a whole bunch of people that worked at XYZ company comes up, but they were only there 3 to 6 months or 3 to 12 months, and there's no long-term stability, that tells you something right then and there about their culture. And you might even want to reach out to one of those people.
I was just about to say the same
and
thing.
Say, look, I saw that you used to work at XYZ company. Would you be willing to have a chat to me? I'm considering employment there, and I'd love to know about their culture. You know, they might say, I don't want to talk or whatever, but you know, a lot of them would.
I think if people say, I don't want to talk, that gives rise to you asking more questions, doesn't it?
That's like a red flag. It's like when people would say to me, when I'd ask for references on people and they'd say, oh, look, I'd rather not. Oh, that's a bad reference.
Hello?
That's a bad reference, because people who like people want to help them, and they'd go, oh, they're fabulous, but I'm not allowed to give a reference. Company won't allow, but they're fabulous. And they'll just say that. Wish I could, but they're, you know, that will tell you, tone tells you a lot about those things as well. So, you know, brand and who you work for, the products that you buy, you need to look to see where they're from. Where are they manufacturing their product from? You know, are they?
Most of it comes, you know, I look in my industry, I work in micromobility, electric bikes, electric scooters, and that the whole ecosystem around all of that. Virtually all those devices are made in China or Taiwan, like the majority, and all the components like batteries and those sorts of things, a big proportion of them, it's starting to happen in other parts of the world, but a big proportion comes out of China. You don't have a window into what's going on there. There's no transparency. So how do we make decisions in that industry, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm preaching, but, you know, try to buy local if you can. You know, try to help your country, the country that you're in, and, you know, buy local product to help small businesses. Now, the other thing is, here's the other thing, and we kind of had a little bit of a touched upon this with one of last season's guest about supporting companies that provide good service. Mm. So when you are going local and you're walking into a shop and they don't acknowledge you or they don't give you the time of day, I walk right out. And that, you know, because I'm not giving my custom to companies that aren't going to provide a good level of service, because it tells me something about them further on.
Yeah, I mean, it's human nature, and it goes down to even little things. I'm listening to you talk, and what you've just said, we've got a local market here, and it's a human story. We've got a local market here, and we were out hunting for dog treats for our dog, and we went to this local market. We specially researched. We knew the lady that was going to be there, And we walked past two other dog treat places, and we walked all around the market to try and find this one lady because she gives great service. The minute you turn up, she gives your dogs like so many treats, it's not funny. So of course then you have to buy some. But we actually had a conversation with her, and she said, "Oh, did you see the other two tents with dog treats?" We went, "Yeah," we walked right past them. And that goes back to that, right? You chase good service. You will look after the businesses where you feel seen and where you feel respected and where you feel looked after.
And you will pay a little bit more for that service and that quality, as long as your product is competitive and it's not crazy $30,000 bag. You know, like how much leather can you put in a bag? But, you know, seriously. And I know. It's sort of, so it's like wine. You know, you're not going to buy Cass wine, but is a $3,000 bottle of wine better than a $100 bottle of wine? Probably not.
Yeah, I've often wanted to, we've often done like the brown paper bag test, because there's a lot of snobbery around wine and champagnes and those sorts of things. And if you did a brown paper bag test.
Can I tell you, I'll tell you this story. We did a brown paper bag test one time. I'll never do it again. I felt ashamed of myself.
Really?
My husband and I both felt ashamed of ourselves for doing it. So what happened? This was years ago, probably 20 years ago. And there was this person that my husband used to deal with who was just like big talker. Oh, I only drink $100 bottle of wines. And $100 bottle of wine, it's expensive today, but that was really expensive back then. I only drink $100 bottle of wine, blah, blah, blah. And then back in the day, Melbourne, a lot of places would bring your own. Mm-hmm. Restaurants were. So we weren't going to go buy a $100 bottle of wine. We bought a $15 bottle of wine. Back then, that was an okay bottle of wine.
Yeah. Right? It's still an okay bottle of wine, I have to tell you.
You know, but back then it was still okay. Anyway, so we get to the dinner and he's brought his $100 bottle of wine and he's bragging on it. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. I said, I don't think it's it. Let's do a little bit of a brown paper bag test. So we did that. We had the waiter do the thing. Anyway, he picked our $15 bottle. He picked. And do you know why I felt ashamed? Because we won at what cost? We won by humiliating him.
Right.
He was humiliated.
Oh, he thought the better wine was the $15 one.
It was our $15 bottle of wine. Everybody picked the $15, not the $100 that he bought that he was so proud of. And he was humiliated. And you could just see it drain out of his face, like he was. And we felt like shit. Sorry, that's the only thing I can say.
Yeah,
we felt this talk. We felt so like, and we swore we would never do anything like that again. It's not worth. Just go. Yeah, your wine's great. Love it. Thank you for bringing it. Gratitude. Yeah. Thank you for
being so generous. Yeah.
Like, thank you for sharing your beautiful wine with us. That's what we should have been doing. But it was just mainly because he was going on and on and on about it all the time that it's kind of like someone who's bragging about on social media all the time. You kind of go, come on, give me a break. But it was a lesson in, just be the bigger person.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, as you said, the point you made earlier, a lot of all of that comes from lack of security. So, you know, back to that job interview scenario, yes, we need to, that's the place to brag, but in a nice structured way. But if you're bragging left, right, and center and big noting yourself left, right, and center, that's often a sign that the opposite is true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, at the end of the day, when we post this, I hope that people come back and comment on this and tell us what their experiences have been and what they think about this, whether or not you would actually quit a job or have you quit a job because you weren't happy with the ethics or the person leading it, because it might, the company might be
or
fine,
they asked you to lie.
Or they asked you to lie. Do not, my recommendation, if someone asks you to lie, you need to say no.
Whether it's overt or covert, because there are the scenario that I was in, the person that was asking me to lie was, he'd reframed the whole thing that it actually wasn't a lie, but I knew damn well it was a lie.
And we're talking about lies where they want you to lie about something that's happened that will impact, not the $100 bottle of wine.
Oh, no. We're talking about, you know,
we're talking about work.
Big issues. Yeah. Big issues.
Yeah, big issues and things at work, like don't tell the client that this happened, even though it's going to impact them. If they ask you, tell them that you didn't. No, you just say no. You just say no. I'm not. If they ask me, I'm going to tell them the truth. You know, I won't offer it, but I'm not going to. And then get the heck out of there.
Get the heck out of there.
Get the heck out of there and start. And we will talk about this in another episode. And that's the plan B.
Yeah.
Always having a plan B.
Career cushioning.
Career cushioning and plan B. We'll talk about this in one of our next episodes. So I hope everybody got something out of this.
And watch the series. It's actually a good series.
Oh,
the
my
new look.
God.
It's,
and also, there's a book called Sleeping with the Enemy.
Ah, okay.
That's about, I'm obsessed now. It's like, you know, and seriously, and I looked up everything about Christian Dior as well. And he was
he
a good
comes
guy.
Out looking really good, doesn't he?
Yeah, he was a good guy. So it was a very tough time back then.
Yeah, tough time.
But you know what? Every generation goes through some tough time of something. Like there's something that we're confronted with,
yeah,
when it comes to our morals and our ethics and how we're going to address
that. At what point do you bend your principles? And I think that's really at the heart of it. How far will you go to bend your principle to make a buck? And that answer is different for everybody.
Exactly.
And the circumstances.
Exactly.
So on that note.
On that note.
We'll see you next. Or you'll hear us next time.
Exactly. Bye.
Bye. For more information about Every Step and our guests, head to everystepodcast.com. To be notified of new podcasts, please subscribe via your favourite listening platform. And of course, follow us on social media and direct message us to share your ideas about guests or topics.